Hey, Jason, how you doing? It's Adam Pascal.
Speak. Awesome. Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Adam Pascal, who will be taking part in the Strathmore show on Sunday, March 12th, called The Circle of Life, Songs of Tim Rice. Adam, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
Tell us, our listeners, because they're gonna read that and say, whoa, I'm going to buy my tickets now. explain what's going on. Is Tim Rice going to be there, or what do we got going on?
Tim Rice is going to be Skyping himself in, but it's a concert of myself and 250 teenage young performers, musical theater performers, singers, dancers, actors, all part of this Young Artists of America organization, and we are going to be saluting Tim Rice and performing the songs from his shows, and it's going to be a great night. You know, there's a huge orchestra. The concert is being put together by a guy named Hugh Woolridge, who I've actually worked with before. And if your listeners who have seen the Chess DVD with Josh Groban and Idina Menzel and myself, mm-hmm. Hugh produced and directed that concert, and so he has a lot of experience doing these sort of large scale, lots of people, lots of musician type concerts, and he's really good at it. He puts together a great show, and I think it's going to be a really exciting, one of a kind evening.
Definitely. You said it was hosted by a group called Young Artists of America. Can you explain what they do? Do you know anything about the group?
Yeah, I mean, they're an organization that brings together middle school and high school students who are interested in the performing arts, and they give them an experience of working with professionals in the industry, and also putting on these fully produced musical theater performances. So they're giving kids an experience of what it's like to actually do musical theater on a professional level. And I think it's a life-changing experience for all of these kids, and it's great for the audiences because they're seeing these really fully produced, fully realized shows, and you know it's a win-win for everybody involved.
Absolutely. You mentioned that there's going to be like literally hundreds of people on stage with you. Who all will that be? Will they be kids as well?
Yes. No, it's me and all the kids.
Oh,
absolutely.
Wow.
I, from what I understand, I'm the only sort of like other singer involved in the evening that's not one of the kids.
but you're young at heart.
Yes, exactly. I appreciate that. Thank you. So it's all the kids, and again, it's all this amazing music from the career of Tim Rice. So you're going to see stuff from The Lion King and from Chess and from Jesus Christ Superstar and just everything from his career and Aida. You know, he's had such an illustrious career and has written such amazing music over the course of, you know, the last 40 years. And me and all these kids, and it's going to be amazing.
That's awesome. So which of those are you at? You mentioned a couple of Jesus Christ Superstar, Evita, Joseph, Technical Dreamcoat, and so many. Lion King. Which one of those will you be performing? Are you doing all of them?
No. Without letting too much out of the bag, I'm going to do something from Jesus Christ Superstar, something from Chess, and probably something from Aida, I would imagine, and a couple of other surprises, I think, that we have in store for the evening.
Right. Now, you've worked with Tim Rice on Aida and Chess and, I believe, a couple others, right?
He's such an amazing guy. And for somebody who has had, you know, the career that he's had, what struck me the most about him is that he immediately puts you at ease. You know, he's not somebody that makes you feel like that you can't just relax and be yourself. That was the biggest thing that struck me about him personally. But professionally, what I was amazed at is that, you know, he's always working to make his material better. So, for example, Chess is a show that he wrote, you know, 30 years ago, and he's still tweaking lyrics. You know, he's still changing things. He's still writing. He's still trying to make it better. Like, he doesn't just say, okay, this is done and let's move on. Like, he's always thinking about these projects and these songs of his and working on them constantly. To this day, will still change things if he has an idea about how to make it better.
playing a chess match with himself over his own material.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, we mentioned that, you know, we're going to have all these kids on stage with this group, but does that take you back to you being a kid? Where, how did you get into performing? You were born in the Bronx, right? Explain to our listeners how you got from there into Rent.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I didn't grow up doing musical theater. I was born in the Bronx and grew up on Long Island and in Manhattan. And my my experience up until doing Rent had been playing in rock bands. I had played in bands and sang in bands, you know, all throughout high school and college. And for your listeners who are familiar with musical theater and musical theater performers, they probably know Idina Menzel. And she and I actually grew up together. We lived down the block from each other in Long Island. Went to the same elementary school and junior high school and high school, and I've known her since third grade.
Wow.
Anyway,
so wait, you knew her when she was Adele Dazeem or Idina Menzel?
Yes, I've known her in every facet of her life. I've known her. So she had already been cast in the show. And called me up and said, you know, I'm doing this off-Broadway musical and they're having trouble with a casting this role of Roger. And they're seeing all sorts of different types of people. And I thought of you, and do you want to go in and an audition? And I said, sure, what do I have to do? And she said, I think you just go in with your guitar and sing a song. Right. So that was really my introduction into the whole world of musical theater was this phone call from her, and I went in and auditioned for the show and ended up getting cast, and my career was launched from then on.
That's so great. And you were nominated for a Tony for that, and it's well, it's kind of a rock musical, so your skill set was already sort of there, but you definitely broke out into the acting world as well with that. What was it working with Jonathan Larson right before his passing, man? Just what a genius.
He was a genius, you know, but a very sort of like a humble genius,
right,
in many ways. You know, he was actually a very sort of like a contradiction in terms, because he was a very humble genius, but then if you got him into a deep conversation, he would say things like, "I'm going to change the face of musical theater."
Right.
So, like, he kind of knew that he was destined to do something special, and was confident and aware of his own abilities as a writer.
You mentioned changing musical theater. It always strikes me how, you know, we had the marriage equality ruling in Supreme Court, like, what was it, like a year or two ago? But
Right. Art
is always, like, decades ahead of those big changes, planting the seeds. Rent, its first stage reading was in 93, I think, and then I think Philadelphia came out the same year in Hollywood. But
Right. You
guys, I mean, to me, that year was when you guys planted that seed, which actually grew into this. But sort of talk about how art is sort of way ahead of the curve in ways that we don't even realize at the time.
Well, I mean, you know, it really comes down to the artists themselves and the individuals and the people that they are. And, you know, the creative community in our culture and around the world are in many cases made up of people who are marginalized by society. Whether it be the gay community or you know certain sections of certain religions or whatever it is, you know, wherever people feel marginalized, a lot of times they tend to turn towards forms of artistic expression to express their dissatisfaction with the way that the world is, and so that's why a lot of those sort of seeds get planted in the artistic community, because they're being planted by the people who are living them, you know, and living through whatever those situations are that are driving these movements for people to be treated fairly and treated equally and sort of like move our society in directions that are more inclusive. And so Rhett, you know, Jonathan lived in those communities. You know, Jonathan lived in the parts of New York City and rolled with people who did feel marginalized and did live sort of like on the sort of more outskirts of society. And so he wrote about the people that were his friends and the people that he loved and the struggles that they were going through.
Absolutely. And is it true that that when it came time to do the movie, that Timberlake was pushing for your role, but it was Chris Columbus that said, no, we're sticking with the original cast for the most part?
I don't know the real answer to that. So I certainly can't speak for Justin Timberlake. I actually think that the stories are a little bit confounded, because there was a version of Rent, the movie, that was going to be done several years prior to the version that we did.
Gotcha.
And Chris Columbus was not the director of that. That was going to be Spike Lee.
Ah.
And I think that maybe for a minute Justin was, I don't know if he wanted to do it or if they wanted him, I don't know, but his name was tossed around as being part of that version, that Spike Lee version. But by the time the Chris Columbus version came around, I don't think that that it was something that he was interested in doing. Again, I don't know him and I can't speak for him, but I think by that point, that version of the movie that would have potentially starred him and probably other pop stars at the time was not something that was being considered anymore.
Right.
But again, I don't know the real story. But he was at some point somehow, possibly, maybe he, like I said, maybe he wanted to, or maybe somebody's wishful thinking of wanting him to do. I don't know.
Well, I'm glad that for the most part, I know they added like Rosario Dawson and stuff, but for the most part, I like that. It always bugs me when those great musicals, like, let's say, Julie Andrews in My Fair Lady gets kicked out for Audrey Hepburn or you know, whatever the case. So I think that's what made the movie. But it would have been different with Spike Lee, for sure. But what was it like working with Chris Columbus, another great director?
He is a great director and a great person. And he just, you know, the experience of making the movie with him was, it couldn't have been better, because, you know, his whole reason for making the movie was because he just loved the show. You know, he and was motivated purely by his love for the show and his admiration for Jonathan Larson. And, you know, I think that he, you know, and also that's why he wanted those of us from the original cast in the movie, because I think that was, in his experience, when he came to see the show, that was part of the experience for him, was seeing it and seeing all of us. And I think he wanted to, as best he could, recreate that experience that he had seeing the show live on stage with the original cast. I think he wanted to recreate that as best he could on screen. And he really, you know, he used us not just as actors, but as a source of information and as a source of connection to Jonathan, because he didn't have that personal connection to him and we did. And so, you know, it was very collaborative in a lot of ways. Like, he would come to us and ask us questions about how we thought a certain scene should be shot, or, you know, what our particular take on this moment was, and, you know, and so it wasn't just an experience of actors showing up and, you know, sort of like saying their lines and going home. It was much more a personal experience for him as well as for us.
Absolutely. And those song, man, it's just, I could get goosebumps and just start sobbing like a little baby and just think of Seasons of Love and just all those songs. Man, it goes right to the heart. So after Rent, you start landing all these other great roles, like the Joel Grey's role from Cabaret, the MC. What was that like?
Yeah. That was really a life-changing experience for me, and a career-changing experience for me. You know, it was a part in a production that was so brilliant and so terrifying for an actor to take on, because it was really, you know, for me personally, I'd never done anything like that before, and it was very intimidating to do all of those things that are required in that role. You know, from, you know, the top of the second act being pretty much a 10-minute improv with the audience every night. You know, and also being almost naked on stage for a good portion of the show. And, you know, all of these things, and also all of the choreographed numbers, every number was a fully choreographed number. And that was something that I was not used to and had no experience with. So to have the opportunity and to be entrusted with this brilliant role in this brilliant production, you know, and then have it for all intents and purposes, go really well. It was incredibly life-changing for me, and it opened up a lot of doors, and it allowed people to sort of see me in a way that they hadn't seen me before, and sort of break out of a little bit of that sort of like rock and roll Broadway guy and do something that was unexpected. And I've tried to work my career in that direction of doing things that are more unexpected and less what people would typically come to think of me as doing, so I do try and stay away from the sort of the rock and roll Broadway stuff, because I kind of feel like I've been there and I've done that, and I'm more interested in doing stuff that is more of a challenge for me, personally and artistically.
Yeah, you've done the rock thing, and the best probably one ever, so you're good with that. But speaking of the more challenging ones, what was more challenging for you, Billy Flynn Chicago or playing Shakespeare in Something Rotten?
Billy was a little bit more challenging in that I didn't have a lot of time to actually learn that part. I only had about 5 days.
You didn't go to law school?
I had law school, yeah. Barely enough time to memorize the lines of dialogue. So that was a little bit trickier. And also I think that, that was, Chicago's a weird one in that it's a machine over there. Like, I was the 52nd Billy Flynn as part of that production, right. in the 20 years or so that they've been running,
right.
So they cycle people in and out of those roles so quickly. And, you're not really given, and they're very short commitments, so you're not really given the time to settle into that part. And so I the whole time I was there, it was so much fun, but it was also I felt a little unsettled. I never really got a chance to sort of like get it under my skin.
But the second part of that though, Something Rotten, Shakespeare, how was that a challenge too?
It was a challenge in that there's a lot of, jumping between Shakespeare and the character of Toby Belch and going different accents. And, but the role is so well written and it's so much fun. And, the challenge for me for that role was really the tap dancing. I had never put on a tap shoe before. And so I had to learn this tap number and, again, pushing your own limits, far beyond what you ever thought you could do, I think is a necessity if you're going to be successful in this business and to take risks. And, look, the first night I got out there and I did that tap number, I blew it. It was horrible. But, you come back and the great thing about doing a show 8 times a week is you have the next night to come back and try and do it better. And each night it got better. And so, being willing to take those chances and fall on your face, as it were, is something that I think is vital to personal and professional growth.
Even if it hurts your face.
Even if it hurts your face.
Well, we got to talk about Aida, just to bring it back around to this concert you're doing now.
Yeah.
Working with Tim Rice and Elton John on that, too. I mean, man, those two, we've talked about Lion King and stuff earlier, but those two really reshaped musical and even thrust it more into the mainstream with some of those Disney movies and then these Broadway shows, and you were a big part of that. So just talk about their collaboration and what it's like just, standing at the altar of two brilliant minds like that.
Right. They couldn't be more different as people. I had mentioned earlier that Tim is somebody that puts you at ease and can very easily slip into the role of regular person, and just be one of the group in a group of many. But Elton's not like that. Elton is like
superstar.
He's kind of exactly what you would think he is,
right.
He doesn't put you at ease. He doesn't sort of like after 10 minutes, you're like, oh, this is just a regular guy. He's not. He's just not a regular guy.
Right.
He's a force of nature, and he's always on, and he is always extraordinary. He's you never forget. Oh my God, I'm sitting here at this table with Elton John. It's what I would imagine sitting at a table with Prince or Michael Jackson or
Elvis or something.
Elvis, yeah. Or you know, any of these. Like, some people are just, you know, like regular people. Springsteen, you know, like there are some superstars that are regular people and some that aren't. You know, I think Elton is like Mariah Carey. Elton is like, you know, these people that just their public persona has become who they are,
right?
In every facet. And but you know, look, he has the brilliant musicianship and songwriting abilities that back it up. So he's allowed to be whatever he wants. You know, he's created some of the greatest music of all time.
Well, we appreciate that during this interview you've been able to be a regular person, even though you've been in some of the greatest work ever. Again, just for our listeners, it's Sunday, March 12th at Strathmore. It's called Circle of Life, Songs of Tim Rice, and Adam Pascal is going to be there singing with hundreds of kids. You can't miss it.
Indeed.
What's, final sell? Take us out. Why should we come?
Well, I mean, look, you're gonna come and you're gonna have an evening of a full orchestra, a full 250 person chorus of these amazingly talented kids, all of us singing this incredible music from the career of Tim Rice. And so you're gonna know every song. Every song's gonna be amazing. It's gonna be, you know, performed to within an inch of its life and orchestrated to within an inch of its life. And it's gonna be just a really exciting evening of one showstopper after another.
Awesome. Adam Pascal, you're the man. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.